The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Well, just the other day my phone rang, but it was a number I couldn't recognise, so I didn't know what to do. I googled it, still didn't recognise the number. Now what do I do? Do I take the call? It could be spam, it could be a scam, or it could be important. I finally took a deep breath, I took the call, and I'm glad I did. It was someone I knew and it was important. But who calls these days? Normally when my landline phone calls, I say to my wife, Steph, they'll be your mum. And she says, no, it'll be your mum. I go, no, it'll be your mum. She goes, no, it's your mum. Because who calls anymore? Because we don't know how to talk. So these days, we'll either shout at each other or we don't talk at all. And we certainly don't know how to talk about important things. And we don't talk about God anymore. But that's okay because God talks to us. In the Bible, it says God sends his son Jesus and Jesus talks to us. I showed you this photo last year. I got it off the internet. It's not Jesus, but I think if Jesus was around today, that's what he'll look like. Short, tanned, nondescript, Middle Eastern male, walk around the countryside of Palestine speaking Aramaic. And for the next 3 weeks, I'll be looking at the series, What Would Jesus Say? And we'll look at a character that Jesus meets in the Bible. We ask the question, what would Jesus say to this person? And what would Jesus say to us? And this comes in the form of a 20-minute talk, followed by question and answer from you guys. And today in the Bible, Jesus meets the woman from Samaria. And we ask him the question, what would Jesus say to the isolated and lonely? And we just met this woman in that Bible reading, and she's a complicated character because she's from another race. She's another religion. She sneaks out in the middle day while no one's looking, like we might sneak out for a cigarette, and she's isolated and alone. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about noon. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" And the Samaritan woman said to him, "You are a Jew, and I am a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans." What is Jesus doing here? This time last year, I went to Indonesia. I went to a church service, and it was full of hundreds and hundreds of people on their feet, clapping, singing, worshipping, waving their arms in the air. It was an amazing spectacle. So I videoed it, uploaded it on social media. And you know how social media works. At first, the comments are overwhelmingly positive. They're saying things like, "Oh, amazing, awesome, so happy for you." And then with social media, the comments soon swing in a different direction and they go negative. Because look at the picture. What's wrong with that picture? There are no men. So suddenly the comments are going, "Where are the men? Typical, useless, lazy men staying at home, making the women do all the work." And then with social media, the comments soon go in a third direction. And sooner or later, the comments were saying things like, "Hang on, I'm pretty sure in Indonesia the women sit on one half of the church and the men sit on the other half of the church. Hang on, I'm pretty sure Sam is the wrong section of the church. He's sitting with the women," and suddenly all the comments are piling and dissing and hating on me. I had committed a cultural, social and religious fail. And Jesus does the same. He commits a cultural, religious, social fail. Why? Because he's got three important things he wants to say to this woman and three important things he wants to say to us today. Number one, it's okay to get tired. Jacob's well was there and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. This is my favorite verse in the Bible because it shows that Jesus, the Son of God, the second person of the Trinity, got tired and had to sit down. I love my mobile phone because it gives me freedom, autonomy. I can roam around with it. But it's also got me addicted to PowerPoints. Whenever I walk into a room, I'm just scanning, 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 looking for a PowerPoint. Just the other day, I went to a cafe and I found the table right next to a PowerPoint, and I sat down and I plugged in. But after a little while, another man comes along. He wants to share the PowerPoint with me, and to do that, he's asking me to move over so he can sit on my chair. So I said, no, I'm not sharing my PowerPoint. And I'm sure in the Bible, the Good Samaritan would not have shared his PowerPoint either, because it's a basic human need. Our phones need to be recharged, and Jesus needs to be recharged. He's tired, and he needs to sit down. He's thirsty, he needs water. He's peopled out. He sends the disciples into the town to do the shopping while he stays back for some alone time. It's okay to get tired. This is Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Before we can have self-actualization, we need esteem. Before we can get esteem, we need love and belonging. Before we can get love and belonging, we need safety. And before we can have safety, we need to meet our physiological needs. And you can't see it there, but they've put for physiological needs food, water, and sleep. Sleep is a new thing. They've only put that in there in the last 5 or 10 years. When I went through university, they didn't put sleep in Maslow's hierarchy of needs, but it's a basic human need. I went to a parenting seminar, and they showed us the peak performance pyramid. And what they were trying to show us was before you look after the emotion of parenting, the psychology of parenting, the wisdom of parenting, you need to meet the most basic human need to perform as a parent, and that was sleep. You need to sleep if you're going to perform as a parent. That's a peak performance pyramid. And us Christians need to hear this, because in the Christian tradition, we've confused busyness with holiness and holiness with busyness. As if I'm busy, 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 I'll be holy. And if I want to be holy and please God, I need to be busy. And so we make our ministers and deacons busy. We make our young children busy. We make the small groups busy. We make the church program busy. When I went to Bible college, 1 week a year, we do a mission with a church. And I remember our principal would tell us before we went to mission, now we want to be busy. But Jesus says, no, we need to sit down, have a drink, and have a break. It's okay to get tired. It's a basic human need to sit down and have a break. Number two, it's okay to admit our brokenness. Jesus told her, go call your husband and come back. I have no husband, she replied. And Jesus said to her, you're right when you say you have no husband. The fact is you've had 5 husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you've just said is quite true. What is Jesus doing here? He asked the woman about her husband, and she has to admit she's had 5 husbands, and now she's living with a man she's not married to. Now, if we've had a typical Western fundamentalist religious upbringing, this is what we're hearing. Oh, this woman, she's been married 5 times, divorced 5 times, now living with a man she's not married to. But I've done some research into this passage, and apparently if you're from an African tradition or from a Middle Eastern upbringing, this is what you're hearing instead. This woman has been married 5 times, and 5 times her husbands have abandoned her one after the other, and now the present man she's with won't even do her the dignity and honor of marrying her. Instead, he's only using her for sex, companionship, housework, but won't give her the status and security of a married woman. In other words, she is a broken woman, and Jesus is allowing her to face her brokenness. You may know that a few years ago, I took up boxing for fitness, and if you do boxing for fitness, you just hit a bag over and over and over and over again. And I hit this bag over and over and over again, and eventually I weakened the biceps tendon on my shoulder until finally, twang, it ruptured and pulled right off the bone, and I needed surgery to repair it. And that's when the surgeon told me that the rate of injury in men over 35 taking up a new activity is 100%. You may as well have just said stayed home. But it's not just a new activity, It can be an old activity. I have a friend I used to play rugby with at college, and he decided, you know what? I'm going to play rugby again, just to show I can. First game back, he broke his ankle. So a broken bone, a broken tendon, a broken muscle, it's actually nature's wake-up call. It's nature's feedback mechanism. It's nature's way of saying, we're not the people we think we are, we're not okay, and something needs to change. And this woman is broken, and Jesus is her feedback mechanism. He's allowing her to see that things are not okay and things need to change. And she's broken in at least two areas. Area number one, she's isolated and lonely. She's come out in the middle of the day where no one can see her. She doesn't want to see anyone. They don't want to see her. She is disconnected. And we in the West right now are also disconnected. Catherine Gillespie, writing in Vice, says this: a loneliness survey finds Australians are very, very lonely. 60% of Australians say they're lonely. 80% of Australians say loneliness is a problem. This is Sebastian Junger, recent book, Tribe, on homecoming and belonging. He says, we in the West, we have no home, no tribe, no belonging. And because of that, we have a higher rate of anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress disorder compared to other countries where there is a home, tribe, and belonging. George Monbiot, writing recently in The Guardian, the age of loneliness is killing us. And he talks about how in the West, loneliness now, according to a Harvard research, is what they call a health epidemic. It is of epidemic proportions. It's just as likely to kill us as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. And it's twice as deadly as obesity. Our Western individualism, it's literally killing us. We got told to disconnect ourselves from others. We got told to disconnect ourselves from tradition. And we got told to disconnect ourselves from God, and it's not working. That's the first area she's broken in. She's isolated and lonely. The second area she's broken in is she carries shame in her life. She's morally injured. And we in the West are moving into an age of shame. This is John Ronson, TED speaker, author. This is his book, So You Have Been Publicly Shamed. David Brooks, writing just 2 years ago in the New York Times, calls us now the shame culture. We in the West, we moved into an age of shame because something really interesting has happened in the West. In the last 100 or 200 years, we told ourselves, oh, there's no such thing as guilt. Guilt is just this made-up, arbitrary, social, religious construct. Get over it. Oh, and there's no such thing as God. Just do whatever makes you happy. But instead, we've moved into an age of shame because we want to be better than who we are. We're not who we want to be. We've seen or done things we shouldn't have seen or done, and we carry moral injury and moral corruption, and so we carry shame with us. And here's the interesting thing with shame. It's very hard to get rid of shame. Because at least with guilt, there's forgiveness. If there's a God, there's someone who can forgive you. But with shame, who's going to forgive you? You can't forgive yourself. Forgiveness, by definition, needs an external reference point. And right now, our only external reference point now is society. And society is very unforgiving. But Jesus says, I will forgive, I will take away shame, I will heal, I will restore. Number three, Jesus says, we are thirsty for Jesus. Jesus answered, everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. The water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life. You might know that last year I had my third midlife crisis and I bought a motorbike. And so when I ride my motorbike, I wear a high-vis safety vest. And my wife, Stephanie, says to me, oh, You can't wear a high-vis vest when you ride a motorbike. It looks so uncool. And I said, but it makes me safe. And she said, well, it was about safety. Why'd you buy a motorbike in the first place? I thought, oh, I hate it when they use logic against you. So why did I buy a motorbike? Well, I bought it because it promised me adventure, identity, freedom, status, and honor. And you will roll your eyes and think, oh, come on, that's just a lump of metal that gets you from point A to point B. If you think it's going to give you freedom, identity, status, and honor, oh my goodness, you are going to be disappointed. You're going to destroy the bike, and it's going to destroy you. But we do that with everything in life. This is water, basic human need. We need it for hydration, but then we ask so much more from water, don't we? We may get a sports power drink. It promises winning, success, ambition, and if I can have this, then I'll have freedom, honor, status, security. And then if we ask that from our water, we're going to be disappointed, we're going to destroy the water, and we're going to destroy ourselves looking for something that's not there. But we do the same with relationships, don't we? Relationships, another basic human need, it gives us love and belonging. But then we ask so much more from our relationships. We now need to be the power couple, the trophy couple. It's about aesthetics, being Instagram worthy, getting the likes, honor, winning, success, and ambition all over again. If we can have this, we'll have freedom, identity, security, and hope, and all our dreams fulfilled. And then we think, well, if that's what you want from your relationship, I think you're asking too much. You will destroy the other person, you will destroy the relationship, and you will destroy it yourself. Jesus says whoever drinks this water will thirst again. Like, it will meet your basic human needs, but it can't do anything more than that. And same with everything else in life. But Jesus says, I will give you living water. Let me be your freedom, your status, your honor, your security, your identity, your hope, your fulfillment. Because I will give you eternal life, a full life, a fulfilled life in this life and the life to come. So what would Jesus say to the isolated and lonely? Three things. Number one, it's okay to get tired. Number two, we have to face our brokenness. You got to know your inner hole before you can come out of the hole. And number three, come to Jesus for living water, eternal life. Many years ago, I went to a wedding. I sat next to a man. We barely knew each other. But by the end of the night, we were talking freely. And he said, I am a lawyer. My whole life, I wanted to be a lawyer. I studied hard in high school. I got the marks. I got into law school, and I'm a lawyer. And then he said, and I've traveled the world. My whole life, I've wanted to travel the world, and now I've done it. And I've just bought a house. My whole life, I've wanted to own property, and now I've bought a house. And then he said to me, but I still haven't found what I'm looking for. I saw in front of me a man that night who was thirsty for Jesus. See, you and I are thirsty for Jesus, whether we know it or not, and we can try to fill that thirst with other things, but they can't fill our thirst. Only Jesus can fill our thirst for Jesus. I have another friend called Spiro. Spiro was into investing and banking in his 20s, and he made so much money, he retired, stopped work, and traveled the world in his 30s. And that's when someone told him about Jesus. And so Spiro decided to know, love, and worship Jesus. And now Spiro tells me every now and then he meets these Christians who say they grew up with Christian parents, and because they've known Jesus all their life, there is not a day they have not known Jesus. And Spiro says, do you know what I think when I meet people like that? Spiro said, I envy them. I too wish I could have known Jesus all my life. I would have given up all the money I made in my 20s if only I could have known Jesus earlier. See, you and I have a thirst for Jesus. And we can fill that thirst with other things, but we'll destroy those things and we'll destroy ourselves. But when we come to Jesus, he will give us a full life, a fulfilled life in this life and the life to come.
Okay, do you think that we can be followers of Jesus and still be thirsty for other things that promote status, e.g. motorbikes?
Well, I guess the answer is yes and no. Like, we're always a work in progress. So, of course, we're always going to look into our toys for status. And, you know, I met a man who was just very profoundly said the art of being a man is to actually grow. You know, the journey from boy to manhood is lifelong. So I think bit by bit we're still growing. We're always a work in progress. So obviously, Jesus should give us all the status and security we need. But somehow we still project on our work, our family and our possessions, the need to do something more than just what they are, the need for status and security. So I think we're always a work in progress.
This is sort of a follow-up question.
Yeah.
If Jesus can give us all of our freedom, satisfaction and so on, what would it look like to practically enjoy Jesus?
Oh, okay. Well, everything in life, I have this formula which I repeat whenever I'm speaking here, is we got to enjoy the good things that God gives us just for what they are. No more, no less, but just enjoy them for what they are. Like food, relationships, our work, our possessions, our leisure. Just enjoy them for what they are. A good gift. Don't make less of them, but as in, oh, I don't need those things. No, God's given them to enjoy, but don't make more of them than what they are, like our status, our freedom, our security. Just enjoy them for what they are. And even Jesus himself, like this is where the question's going, yes, he is our freedom, our status, our security, but at the same time, we too can just take a pleasure in enjoying him for what he is as well. I love that verse in the Bible where Jesus, when he's baptized, and Jesus also when he is on a mountain and gets glorified, God does the same thing twice. He suddenly pronounces, "This is my son, in him I take pleasure." And so there's a pleasure that even God the Father finds in knowing Jesus. And we too can just delight in knowing Jesus. And I'm sure we have close friends or close family where we just take pleasure in just being with that person. Like tonight I've got date night with my wife. We do crazy stuff all the time. But I'm really excited. I just can't wait to have just 3 hours tonight where we just cruise around Sydney and we just take pleasure in each other's company. On the yeah, that's right. I'll get a safety vest on the bike.
Okay, well, we're out of time, but please thank our speakers.
All right, thank you. Thanks.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.